Laura versus CUI. Mr. Norberg.
This makes no sense.
Oh, I have.
No, the card is crazy.
Right. The card. Okay. I'm sorry. It's CUI versus Chicago. Sorry. Wrong name.
Thank you, Judge Posner. May it please the court. The district court in this case entered three orders without the city's consent that it intended to temporarily restrain the city's conduct. First was the original TRO. The original TRO in this case was entered last year on August 31st. The city contested the TRO, but despite the city's objection, the district court entered it nonetheless.
What is the current status of this quarrel?
What is the current status of the quarrel? Currently, the city is subject to the preliminary injunction that was entered on October 17th, which forbids the city...
Yes, but what is happening in the district court?
Nothing is happening in the district court currently. There has been a preliminary injunction hearing that was scheduled and continued, anticipating deciding when to hold it, if necessary, after the outcome of this case here in this court. That is the status.
So that second, that modified TRO, which you're going to call a preliminary injunction, that's just continued in force?
Exactly.
So there hasn't been a hearing. So you had promised a hearing, but that's all in suspension until we decide the case. Is that?
That's exactly right, Judge. Yeah. We agreed to comply, and it was an easy thing to do because we believe it's a valid preliminary injunction that was entered and that it would be contempt-worthy for us to disobey the terms.
If we were to agree with you and reverse and dissolve the TRO or injunction, whatever it is, how long would it take you, or what would be the next step in terms of this hearing?
Well, what we're asking the court to do, and the reason we're asking for the dissolution...
Just answer my question. Suppose we agree with you, you know, TRO, we agree with you that it's appealable, and we agree with you that TRO is no good, and throw it out. Then, so there'd be no more, you know, order in force. That's what you want us to do, you want us to throw it out. So what would be the next step? So you promised them a hearing, so what would be involved there? How long would that take?
You're talking about the hearing at the administrative level by the city.
Right, the hearing that you have promised.
I understand. Right. We have promised them a hearing in the event, Your Honor, that we decide to continue.
That's what I'm asking.
Continue.
Look,
okay. Suppose
it's all this legal stuff is wiped out.
Sure.
And the reason it would be wiped out, you know, overcome the appealability problem, is that you have promised a hearing, which would satisfy, you know, the requirements of due process. So when would that take place? What preliminaries would be necessary?
The hearing would take place upon reinitiation of debarment proceedings against Chicago United. And it's important to recognize that right now there are no such proceedings. Right now, CUI is eligible to bid on contracts, and they have been bidding on contracts and receiving contracts, and all of the contracts that they lost when the original debarment decision issued have been returned to them. So your question depends on whether or not the city decides.
I see. So, okay. All right, I understand that. But now, one of the things that's in the TRO that you complain about is this mysterious business about communications. So the judge was unhappy about your trying to channel CUI's communications through one official.
Right.
Now, if we throw everything out, would that remain in effect or what? Would you then, you know, reimpose this limitation about whom they can communicate with?
I think that I can't answer that, but I assume that we probably would, or we would have the right to, without a lawsuit pending, if the entire lawsuit was dismissed, if the injunction was vacated, and the claims, rather, were sent back with instructions to vacate them as moot since the debarment decision was rescinded, then potentially we would remove those restrictions. The reason those restrictions in communication were put in place was because there was a lot of tension between the parties. If that tension were to dissolve, then perhaps those requirements regarding communication
would
be necessary.
Well, presumably, if we threw everything out, if we reversed, there would still be a preliminary injunction proceeding, right? Wouldn't there? I'm just wondering what.
Right. It really depends, Judge Posner, on how this court dealt with this case. If this court vacates the preliminary injunction, for example, deciding that it does not comply with Rule 52 and therefore it's an inadequate.
For clarity, let's call it the TRO. And I realize, okay, you know, once a TRO is appealable, we call it a preliminary injunction. But let's.
Fair enough.
Just for clarity. So if we dissolve the TRO, there would still be a motion for preliminary injunction, right?
There would.
So in that preliminary injunction hearing, they could renew their concern about the communication business. But you're committed that if you try to debar them again, then you would give them a hearing.
Exactly. In the event there are future debarment proceedings, they will receive a live hearing. Now, with regard to whether or not a preliminary injunction proceeding would be pending were this court to vacate or dissolve the TRO, that would depend on whether or not this court does also what we're asking, and that is return it to the district court with instruction that this matter,
the whole case is
the case as filed, the controversy on file, is moot. It's no longer justiciable because this case was filed to prevent the enforcement of an order that no longer
exists. No, I understand that about the debarment, but I wonder if the part about the communication ban is moot.
The communication ban does not have a direct relationship with the pending complaint in this case. Conceivably, they could amend their complaint to include some sort of allegation that they are having some right violated by this specific limitation being placed on the way they communicate.
Oh, I see.
With
so
the city.
So that's a feature of the TRO, but not of the complaint. Is that
exactly?
Right? Okay.
That's exactly right. That is something that emerged as the proceedings went along, and our opponent's perspective is that it was necessary to maintain the status quo. But as we argue in our briefs, and our position is that this is essentially a brand new legal requirement that's been put on the city that really doesn't directly relate to the complaint, doesn't have merit, but also arises from a complaint, a controversy on file that no longer is justiciable. Because when we withdrew the decision, we took this enforcement issue off the table because you can't enforce a decision that no longer exists. Now, once again, I absolutely agree there is some confusion with what to refer to this order as, and I'm happy to refer to it as a TRO, but our position is that the third TRO, the October 17th order, actually legally was the equivalent of a preliminary injunction, at least definitely for the purposes of appealability. Other cases have held for all purposes, and therefore in a surfeit of caution, we certainly would not act in contempt of what is conceivably a valid preliminary injunction, and that explains, to return to your initial question, why we consider ourselves bound by that. And as a result, the third TRO is appealable in this court, and that addresses the threshold issue in this case, and that is jurisdiction. Now, to get to the merits from our perspective, that is the justiciability of the underlying claims and therefore all of the requests for injunctive relief that have sprung from them. It's our position that the district court abused its discretion in entering this order because when we rescinded the debarment decision in September of last year, a little less than a month after it was made, we removed the possibility of enforcement of the debarment decision and therefore removed any need for an injunction against the debarment decision and also removed any need for a declaration that
how do you distinguish the W.T. Grant case? So what they would argue is, well, you know, you're playing cat and mouse, and when they sue, you withdraw your debarment order, but if the suit is dropped, you'll quickly reinstated, and then you won't give them a hearing, or it won't be an adequate hearing, then they'll have to sue again, right? That's the Grant principle. So is there a distinction?
Well, the distinction is Grant does contemplate the idea that it is conceivable that a voluntary cessation such as this can be determined to be disingenuous and therefore can not suffice to moot a case. However, there's a number of cases in this court and also subsequent cases in the Supreme Court, such as City of Mesquite and Northeastern Florida, although they go the other way, they set up a framework for looking at this sort of issue, where the question is whether or not it is there's a likelihood of the same injury occurring in the event that the case is dismissed as moot. Now, in this case, we have gone on the record, in open court and in pleadings and filings in the court, in representing that if and when, and I stress the if, because once again, the decision has not been made whether or not debarment proceedings will be reopened. And since the debarment, contracting has gone on with this company to the tune, public records bear this out, of about $9.2 million in city contracts. But if we were to decide to reopen brand new debarment proceedings, they will receive a hearing that will have all the additional due process protections that they identified as lacking in the initial proceeding.
Isn't a big distinction here the fact that there were actually rules adopted by the city effective December 15th giving that right to a hearing?
Exactly. The rules are important as well.
Well, I mean, it seems to me that takes you out of the problem presented by those other cases. That is, that it's a sham sort of response to the complaint.
Those new rules play a large role in taking us out of that. But what is the final step out of that problem is the personal and individual to this case representation to CUI that in their specific case, if there is a new debarment proceeding, they will receive specific due process protections. The new rules, although they provide the opportunity for due process protections in every case, there is a possibility, and our opponents could argue that under the new rules, they could conceivably be debarred again without a hearing. So the new rules do not guarantee a hearing in every instance. However, in this specific case, the city has represented that we will give them a hearing in the event we reopen debarment proceedings, that they will be allowed to put on witnesses, that they will be allowed to cross-examine the city's witnesses. And there's no reason to believe that what the city's representation is a lie or is a misrepresentation. I see I'm running into my rebuttal. I'd like to reserve.
Thank you, Mr. Norberg. Mr. LaRose?
Morning, Your Honors. Counsel, may it please the Court. My name is Mark LaRose, and along with my partner, Joseph Basco, I represent the plaintiffs, Chicago United Industries, George Loera, and Nick Massarella. The threshold question in this court is whether the court has jurisdiction over the district court's October 17th, 2005 order. I think the answer is evident from the record in this case, and we submit that the answer is no. The October 17th order extended the TRO for a short period of time, 28 days, to allow for a preliminary injunction hearing on the evidence. And it included some additional language that the district court thought was necessary to maintain the status quo and implement the TRO. In order for the TRO to be subject to this court's jurisdiction under Section 1292A1, first, the defendants would have had to object to it, and second, the additional language that the court entered would have to be a modification of the TRO and not merely an implementation thereof. There's no jurisdiction here because the city unequivocally...
No, I don't understand that. The city agreed to have an extension, but it didn't agree to the language. It's not as if the judge said to them, look, if you want to postpone the preliminary injunction hearing, I'm going to... you'll have to agree to my extending the TRO. And this is what the language of the extended TRO is going to say. I'm going to modify it. I'm going to add these things. And then you tell me whether you agree. Well, that didn't happen here.
It partially happened.
I don't care. Well, it has to entirely happen. I mean, you can't say to someone, I want you to agree to this extension and then start modifying it, and then all of a sudden defendant discovers that it has significantly different terms.
See, I don't think they have to agree to the whole thing. They agreed to the extension. There's no question about that. Judge, give us some more time so we can take care of some personal problems.
But that's on the assumption that it'll contain the identical language.
Not on the assumption at all, with the knowledge that it was not going to contain the identical language. At the hearing, counsel objected to the additional language. There's no question about that. But said, I'll agree to the original language, which was the first three provisions. Not enforce the debarment, not cancel any contracts, and not hold any ancillary administrative proceedings against the individual plaintiffs in this case. They didn't agree to the second two, but they don't really need to, because if those second two aren't modifications of the TRO, then this court has no jurisdiction.
Modifications. I don't understand you.
No, they're not modifications. They're merely they're merely under the rationale of. I'm sorry. They're merely implementations of the temporary restraining order.
Well,
three times.
And that's just words. I mean,
no.
Implementation. Of course, the details of implementation can modify the. I mean, like this communications provision, that was new, wasn't it?
It was new, except it was, at least according to the district court, it was new as necessary to implement.
It may have been absolutely necessary modification to stop up loopholes. That's perfectly fine. The point is simply it's new. So, and they didn't agree to it.
Well, hold on.
And it's very onerous and very vague. In fact, I'd be interested in what you thought it meant.
Well, it meant exactly what Judge Shader.
Imposing any restrictions on communications between Chicago United employees of the city, etc., with the exception that Chicago United may not speak directly with any employees regarding matters directly related to this act. Well, what if what if CUI, what if you called up Mayor Daley and said, you know, we're a wonderful company and we have contracts, we'd love to have more contracts with you, and would that be speaking about matters directly related to this action?
No.
No?
What you have to do, Judge, is look
well,
at...
I don't know.
What you have to do is look at it in the context of the three complaints that CUI made. The city, after 19 years, you have to look at the status quo.
No, you can interpret and so on, but this is vague language, and of course, you know, there's a threat of contempt hanging over everybody. So.
What Your Honor decided in the Bogart case, and what was followed by this court in Gautreaux, and followed by and Your Honor followed in the Motorola case, was that it's not a modification that imposes appellate court jurisdiction under 1292 unless it changes the legal relationship between the parties.
Why didn't the judge show this language to the city and say, this is what I want to do, the TRO, and you've got to either agree to that or else we're going to have the preliminary injunction hearing.
Well,
why didn't he do that? He wouldn't have this case.
Well, that's exactly what happened. Because the judge ordered us
that's
to...
That's exactly what happened. He first stated the language to the city, and then the city agreed?
No, not the city.
Then it's not exactly
the city,
what
the
happened.
The city did not agree, but the language was first shown to the city. All the city had to do for us to be here legitimately with this court's jurisdiction was object to everything. Why did they object to holding? Why did they agree to holding a hearing 28 days later, but say we object to this little part of the?
Well, it's not so little. It may not be so little to them, you know.
Except
perhaps it shows that they're being reasonable. They object only to what's objectionable and not to what's not objectionable.
Well, they
it's
may.
It's a very strange world where, unless you object to everything, in your view, you haven't objected to anything.
That's not true, and that's not what I'm trying to say. But what I am trying to say is that the status quo was of doing business for 19 years was a certain way. The TRO was designed to maintain the status quo ante bellum. when the TRO was entered.
The status quo ante bellum was one in which the city had the power to terminate vendors who committed fraud, and this injunction changed that status quo by depriving the city of that power. I don't know what this status quo business does, because the status quo had both your client was selling and the buyer had the right to avoid being defrauded. And after the injunction, your client was selling and the city didn't have the power to terminate anymore.
But the status quo in bellum has to turn back the clock to the day before the debarment, Your Honor. It's antebellum, before the fight. The debarment was the fight. Before the fight, we had the right to sell. If we were the low bidder, we had the right to get the contracts. If the day before the fight, we had the right to pick up the telephone and talk to the people that we needed.
Judge Easterbrook is correct. Talk about status quo ante is not helpful.
Well, I talk about...
The question is it a... one question about any TRO or preliminary injunction is, is it reasonable, is it sensible, and so on. You don't have to talk about status quo.
This
may be perfectly reasonable. I think the language is excessively vague, but even if it's okay, even if it's reasonable, if a judge wants a lawyer to agree to a modification, or you don't want to call it modification, wants to agree to a very specific change in language of a TRO, it seems to me the judge should show that to the lawyer and say, this is what I want to enter. Do you consent to this, or else we're going to have this preliminary injunction here?
Well, what happened, and I didn't get to say it, was the judge said, okay, fellas, this is what I'm thinking about doing. You guys go back to your offices, see if you can agree to the language, and if you can't, submit competing orders. I submitted something to the city. They didn't agree to it. We submitted competing orders. So before this order was entered, the city knew exactly what both parties were proposing. The judge entered the order that he thought was appropriate, and he thought that was appropriate in order to maintain the status quo. I can only say that before this fight, things went on for 19 years one way, and after the fight, they changed. We complained about that.
About a different issue, this WT grant issue. Now, so the city has promised, publicly and so on, and with the support of these rules, even if they're not entirely, completely absolute or something, that if they try to debar you again, you'll get a due process hearing.
That's what the...
Now, why isn't that adequate for terminating the litigation?
That's very similar to what the prison system said in the Kikamura case decided by this court, which followed W.T. Grant, when they enacted rules saying that they would have a process to look at mail from Japanese prisoners and interpreted it. That rule wasn't sufficient for the government in that case.
But you have more here. You have their promise.
Well, Your Honor, they had, let's look at their promise in the context of this case. They had rules in place at the time of the original debarment. We challenged not really those rules, but the implementation of them through what they did to us. Basically, our argument and our allegation in a verified pleading that this was just a sham to lead to a foregone conclusion.
But the original rules didn't allow for a hearing.
The original rules didn't allow for the hearing, but they didn't even follow the original rules. Here's what Justice Williams...
What
I understand that, but they...
Here's what the original rules allowed for that they didn't follow. The original rules required during the debarment process that it be business as usual, that you be treated as innocent until proven guilty, that you be allowed to conduct your business like you always have and fulfill your contracts.
What does it mean, innocent until proved guilty, and if there was no right to a hearing? I don't understand. Where would this proof of innocence or guilt occur?
In this debarment process that we were under. Remember, there was
you've lost me. Under the original rules, you say there was no hearing, but there was a presumption of innocence, and you could only be debarred if you were proved
That's correct.
But if there was no hearing, how is proof made?
Well, the proof was by the allegation by them, our submission of written documents, their internal investigation, and their decision, which is exactly what happened in this case.
Well, if that's exactly what happened, what's your complaint?
The complaint
about
is the complaint is
old
that
rules. I don't understand.
Well, You're saying why are we saying that we don't believe their promise, or that we shouldn't believe their promise, that this sham proceeding isn't going to happen again? I'm saying that you have to look at the history and say...
No, I understand. I don't understand your narrative of the history. You say there was no hearing, but there was this presumption of innocence...
That they didn't follow.
And then you said that's exactly what they did. They conducted an internal investigation and concluded that you should be deported.
And during the course of that investigation, for 4 months when it was totally dead silent, they stopped doing business with us. They canceled our contracts. They called the media and called us crooks.
I don't understand. That was the result of their internal investigation.
No, that was during their internal investigation.
Well, so
when
during their
own
internal investigation,
when their own rules required us.
Required what?
Required us to be treated as business as usual. Not stop doing business with us. Not tell the departments.
I don't see how that fits together with the investigation.
How it fits together is how can you when they
what
say
would
that
be
they
the culminate.
The culmination is, if they didn't follow the rules that they had, even though they were constitutionally deficient and didn't allow us for hearing, what's to lead us to believe that they're going to follow these rules this time?
Well, if they don't, you'll pop back into court, right?
And we'll be right back where we started from. The rule under
But nothing's happened. There hasn't been any hearing.
In this case...
Right? Look, this is all TRO level. Now... If the city, having promised us and promised the district court and so on, that you'll get your hearing and that they'll obey their rules, if they don't do that, you'll go back, they'll look terrible, and you'll go back into court, and Judge Shader will slam them. And so what's the point of...
Well, the point is that even if this court takes jurisdiction, tells Judge Shader he was wrong and the case is moot, the next thing I'm going to do is go back to Judge Shader. I'm going to file an amended complaint alleging that this whole thing was a sham.
Try
to file an amended complaint.
What's that, a threat or something?
No, absolutely not, Your Honor.
You won't file it if we affirm?
No.
There are no damages that you have anymore, right, that flow from that initial
decision? There's over $500,000 in lost contracts that we suffered from the date of the initial notice of debarment until the time that the debarment was finally rescinded and we got back to business as usual.
Counsel was incorrect when he said that those contracts had been reinstated.
No, the contracts were reinstated, but there was a six-month period in which there was absolutely no activity under those contracts. You can't make up for the lost time. We lost $500,000.
So you have a potential damages claim. That's fine. Why is that a reason for keeping this case alive?
We have a potential damages claim, and we believe that based on the actions of the city in this case, that if they give us a hearing, it's going to be just lip service.
Well, yes, I know, but doesn't comedy have certain claims? I mean, it's the city of Chicago. I mean, it behaves faultlessly. Of course, it doesn't, but nevertheless, it's a city, and you're saying, you know, they're liars, and they're completely unreliable, their promises are worthless. So let's have them under judicial supervision, right? Have them under Judge Shader's thumb. Wouldn't it be more sort of civilized to say, well, we'll give the city another chance. They have these new rules, promises. We'll end this litigation. It's not as if there's been a lot of waste. Nothing really happened in this case. It's still at the very preliminary stage. And then, you know, start over.
Your Honor, I notice my time's over. In all due respect, all we ever wanted was a preliminary injunction hearing so that we can prove our case in the district
court.
What
case?
Our case that the city of Chicago has violated our civil rights under Section 1983 by conducting this sham proceedings.
If that's what you want, you don't need this TRO. Right? You want to prove a case of, you know, violation of the Constitution. You want $500,000 in damages, maybe more, maybe an injunction of some sort. But that it doesn't follow that the city should continue to be subject to this vague TRO.
I'm sorry, that's the only way we can protect ourselves in the meantime, and it's the only way that the city really came around. Until this injunction, they had completely stopped doing business with us.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Norberg, what time? 3 minutes? Anything further?
Thank you, Judge Posner. If the court has no questions at this time, the city is prepared to waive our rebuttal time, and we just ask this court to remand to the district court with instructions to dismiss the complaint.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you,
Counsel. Next case for argument is Tunis versus